Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Welcome, Krister Ungerbach. Glad to have you here on the show. Krister, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
So I'm an author now. I previously was CEO of one of the largest family-owned software companies in the world, which is part of the story of how I became an author. The book is 22 Talk Shifts, and when I set out to write the book, I set out to create a book that was practical communication tools that help us in the context of leading both in our professional lives, but also in our personal lives. And as a successful father, successful in business, a man who's successful in business, I always thought that it was almost like two separate languages. There's one language I use at home, and there's one language I use at work. And admittedly, ultimately, my language was pretty aggressive in both. I didn't realize it necessarily. And so 5 years ago, I found myself at the YMCA signing up for a gym membership. And the woman asked me, "Who is your emergency contact?" And I broke down crying because I had no one. And in the three weeks before that happened, I walked out on the CEO job of the company I'd helped build and loved. And then 2 weeks later, my wife walked out on me. And so I really had no one. The business that I was CEO of was a family business. So that was my brothers and my father. And being a leader in a family business, you can't separate leadership in the context of family, because ultimately I was tasked to lead, my father, who was retired, and my brothers, as well as this company. And my three brothers were all employees in the company. They continue to be, and we're all owners. And fortunately, we've recovered our relationship since 5 years ago. But so I was just kind of always struggling with like emotional intelligence. I was an engineer, so I was very kind of, a demanding boss, but I was also kind of engineer. I thought that emotional intelligence and empathy is like a personality trait. And for many years, I was like, I guess I just can't learn this. I just need to kind of go and with my strengths, which is maybe just being kind of a, demanding individual. And when everything kind of fell apart, I said, maybe I really need to figure this out. And I spent, ultimately 3 or 4 years going in. I set aside all the business books, and I was like, I'm going to look everything outside of all the business books, because I started reading business books when I was 12 years old and communication books. So I surrounded myself with all those people, like woo-woo, far-out people that I would have judged back in my CEO days. And I was like, let me see if I can translate what these people are saying and bring it, create tools that can help people both as parents and in their marriages, and also in professional life. And ultimately, the 22 Talk Shifts was the outcome of that kind of years of kind of exploration.
Wow.
Fascinating. Okay. out of situations like that, you either learn or learn heavily, or you don't. And this is great that you learn this and you're willing to share what you learn with everyone else. Can we dive into a little bit? I'm really intrigued by the title.
Yeah.
And I get a feeling I might know what it means, but give us an idea.
Well, what do you think it means?
My first thought is I should have read it before you came on, and I will when you leave. My first thought is that it was probably conversational, shifting the conversation to a different topic or to cover generalized topic areas.
Yeah. No. So, it's really, I think you have the core is, what are specific words and phrases that we can use to shift our relationships and our conversations, as well as our own perspective and the perspective of others? I had the opportunity, and this is one of the things that informed the talk shifts. I had the opportunity, a unique opportunity of learning to lead in French and German as an adult. Most people learn languages kind of like when they're young, it's an unconscious process. And so one of the funny stories I had, I moved to Europe, to France, to open our offices in France right after September 11th. And one of our first customers in France was the Palais du Festival de Cannes, which is the Cannes Film Festival. And so I thought, they don't speak English very well down there. I'll go down and I'll teach our software. I was CEO of a software company. And it'll force me to speak French. I spoke to them for 3 days. I was like, it was kind of like, it was a little bit rough, but I'm kind of proud that I just did it and I forced myself to do it. And they called the salesperson who reported to me at the time on the Monday. And he called me, he said, hey boss, I got some bad news. They said, don't ever send Krister back here ever again. His French is terrible. So within 2 weeks, I found the best business French teacher in all of Europe. And he took me through, here's the shortcuts of how to learn French quickly.
Oh, interesting.
And so what I did is I applied some of those learnings, the way he teaches a new language quickly, I applied them to my English, right? So basically more compassionate, emotionally intelligent communication in English. And it's just very simple, fill in the blanks phrases, easily memorable, like say it this way, replace this with that for some of the most common communication mistakes that end up kind of getting us sideways in relationships, both at work and at home. And so there's 22 of them. There's 6 or 7 that kind of apply in any situation. There's 5 or 6 that apply generally a little bit more in a professional situation, and 5 or 6 that apply much more so generally in kind of parenting and marriage situations. But interestingly, what I find is it's often business people who say the most powerful chapter for me at work was actually from this relationship part of the book, which I call the partner shifts, is the last part of the book. Mm-hmm. And I also find I had one person, his name's Elliot. He texted me, happened to be somebody who used to work for me like 15 years ago. And he had bought the book when it launched. I was in California and I got a text from him. I haven't got a text from him like 10, 15 years. And he goes, hey, is it normal to cry while reading this book? Asking for a friend. And I said, Elliot, what chapter did you cry on? And it was actually a chapter from the leadership, the business part of the book. But it helped him to see an insight of how he was as a parent with his teenager and how he was kind of being critical. And what he realized is that he was being critical with his own teenager because that's how his parents were with him. Right. And I'm sure in any parenting show, that, the psychology is that these patterns of how we were parented tend to show up in how we parent our children, but they also tend to show up in unique ways in how we behave as bosses in our workplace. And then the last thing I'll say is that this was kind of the deeper purpose of where I was going with the book, because I wanted to create, I hear so many women who comment on like Facebook ads and whatever, and they say, I wish my husband would just read this. I bought him a relationship book like 5 years ago, and it sat on his nightstand for 3 months until I finally just put it on the bookshelf because he clearly wasn't going to read it. And so part of the thought with Talk Shifts is to create a business book that a professional, male in a relationship, but it also has a lot of relationship communication tools inside of it. So it's kind of like a kill two birds with one stone. If I'm a boss or a successful CEO like I was, it's less likely that I would read a marriage book. But somebody puts a book by a CEO who's built a $100 million company in front of me, like, I probably would read that. And oh, by the way, it has a lot of tools to help us be better fathers and better husbands in the process. And so the interesting thing I found, which was actually after the book was published, it was so important that we actually did a minor revision to the book that's launching in the next couple of weeks. Two of the people I met on the journey were two marriage counselors. And they were in their 70s. So they have between them, they have like 75 years of marriage counseling experience. And I said, what have people been saying on your couch for decades? Like, day in and day out. And they said, he doesn't listen. She always solves my problems for me. She's always criticizing me. He loves his work more than he loves me. And the interesting thing, or he cares about work more than he cares about me. And the interesting thing I said, these are actually the same things that unhappy employees say when they have a bad boss.
Yep.
And so these parallels of what if the things, the tools that would make us better leaders at work and more successful in our careers were also the same language stems that help us have happier wives and happier husbands and happier children. And that's really kind of the core of really what the talk shifts are.
Well, it makes perfect sense, because you don't know how, no one thinks about the language that we use. And this is something we come up with quite often. We usually talk about listening, But when you're talking to your whether it's your young child or your teenager or your spouse, there's a lot to it. And it's not just, you know, from my training in sound therapy and everything else, it's not just what you say, it's how you say it, how you present when you say these things, and using the right, I think having a good avenue to go down.
Yeah.
Like meaning like we can't think about all this, just think about this.
Yeah.
Is a great way to start it, because I think we get overwhelmed, and I think there's like particularly with guys, I know, you know, it's the men are from Venus, you know, whole concept. Everything happens in here. I was laughing because my wife once said, we always go back to this, I think it was St. Patty's Day or something like that, and I gave her the last sentence of the two paragraphs that happened in my head. Right. And it was something like, and then we'll go to our friend's house. And she looks at me like, what was the rest of the sentence? Right.
Yeah.
And so that concept of, I think that's the other piece, you know, and it's like, you know, and whatever, what you're saying is so intriguing. I want to dive into the book and I'm like, let's just do a chapter.
Yeah. Well, so one of the chapters, so there's two things. I get that comment a lot about, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I have some thoughts on that, but that one thing, like the listening, one of the chapters that's actually getting, you know, like is generally more popular based on like my audiobook and videobook data is called The Secret to Listening is Talking. And the premise is like, you know, if I'm not listening to what you're saying, maybe I'm just not asking questions that I'm dying to know the answers to. So it's going to, as a software engineer, we say garbage in, garbage out. If my questions to you are not things that I'm interested to hear the answers to, then I'm probably less likely to listen. So there's this weird, there's this cycle of how we can sometimes create where we're less likely to listen. And then, and I give some specific tools to how to address that. But this thing about like, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. I agree with you. And this is one of the reasons why I really try to encourage people to watch that. We created a video book. It's one of the first ever video books. So you can actually hear the tonality of how to use some of these tools in the tone that it was intended, right? Because of course, if we read something on the paper, we might get the tone and the pauses and things like that wrong. Not wrong, but we may not be as effective. But then separately, my belief is that if we just start with better words, one of the things I was in rooms with a lot of New Age people, and they'd say, you know, well, if you change your heart, then your words will just naturally change. And I found that for many years, like my heart was in the right place, but my words were not. And so, you know, I may change what's in my heart, but if I don't change the habits of the words that I've been speaking, it's still going to land on you very similar. Like maybe my tone will be a little bit different, but if I still say, yeah, you really need to do this, or you really need to do this, or you should do that, it still has that subconscious, landing differently than saying, you know, just making a specific request of someone and mm-hmm. saying, please do this. And so, you know, so I think that my thought is that when we start using the right words, that's the more important step. And we start getting feedback loops of, oh, this is working a little bit better than some of my previous words. And so sometimes the tone starts to actually naturally develop after we start using the words.
But do you have like an example? Can we get a feel
for it? Here's a good one, just because we were on it. The con story, the thing that I was saying to people in French, unbeknown to me, was you should do this. It's necessary to do this. You must do this. And often I find, even in professional settings or with children, we kind of just complain about people's behavior. Like, why did you do that? Or, are you ever going to do it? And we'll be so much more effective. Oh, you should show up on time. You should clean your room. You should, like, the antidote to that is just making a request. Please clean your room. Mm-hmm. Are you committed to cleaning your room? And then you give the other person an opportunity to say no. And then if they're truly not going to do that, then we can have a conversation about whether or not, but you should clean your room is like, first, it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't, you know? Or you never clean your room. So trying to drive things down to specific requests that we're making of others. I find this at work all the time as a leader. I was coaching one CEO of a small company, and he was telling me a story about one of his executives and who would always show up late for his weekly one-on-one meetings. And he's like, you should show up on time. It really annoys me when you don't work on time. And I said, well, have you asked him? Please, I'd like you to show up on time and, you know, and give an opportunity to say yes or no, or why he's not or whatever. It's like, no, I haven't. And so this is just continuous. You should. And like, it's just like, we just escalate the volume, but we never actually change the words to something that's really going to actually potentially change the course of that outcome. So this went on for like 6 months, you know, every week. So 20 plus times where this person was showing up late and the CEO is getting increasingly frustrated. And all it was a little shift to the words to say, let's make a specific request and give him an opportunity to decline.
I used to have a friend of mine who said, he used to say, you're shitting all over yourself.
Yeah.
but you know, it's interesting. I was just thinking in my business setting, we're getting very business. We're getting very, and Brian and I are doing this more often too. It's like that accountability piece. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay. I'll get to that. Oh, but give me an idea by when.
Yeah.
And so the conversation kind of, it gets refined. Oh, I think I'll do it by next Saturday. So by next Saturday, you'll have it. And it feels really uncomfortable, you know. And one of the things we're getting into lately, because we're nice guys, you know, we're nice guys from New York, you know. but saying no, you know, when you first learn how to say things, especially when it comes to boundaries,
yeah,
it's really uncomfortable, you know. And it comes, and I think it comes out very like aggressive, almost like. For me to say no, it's kind of like, I have to say like, no, just not going to do it. As opposed to all that language you need, you know, language of intention, yeah. I guess they call it, right?
Well, there are two talk shifts around that. One is the enthusiastic yes requires permission to say no. So it's very difficult to say no, depending on how the leader or the person in a position of power positions the thing, right? If I say, hey, I'd really like for you to do this, but you know, hey, I completely understand if you don't have time. I'm literally giving you the reason, I'm giving you the outs. And it's just one of the tools in that chapter. I'm making it easier for you to say no. So as leaders, the more we can make it easier, even for our children or our spouses, make it easier for them to say no, then it's more likely for them to say yes. And if they really do say no, wouldn't we rather like to know that? Because otherwise, you know, if they say yes, but in their mind they're thinking no, then we come across as controlling, right? Controlling parents, controlling husband, controlling wife. And so the more we can give people permission. And as a leader or a parent, we can always come back and say, well, I know you said no, but I'm your parent, I'm your boss, and I really need it done anyway, right? But giving the opportunity to actually get a real no and making it easy. The other thing you mentioned about, there's a chapter 21, I believe, called Actions Don't Speak, Words Do. And I give specifically, this is one of the things that I always wish all of my employees, all of my employees had this chapter, it would basically, it specifically addresses that thing about, oh, I'll get it done next week, of how can you make commitments in language that's more likely that you'll actually meet your commitments. The more specific we are with our commitments to others, the more likely we are to meet them. And it creates a lot less drama, right? If that person says, hey, I'll get it to you on Saturday, and you send them an email on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Like, I told you I'd get it on Saturday. It's 8 a.m. I was planning to get it to you on Saturday at 5. But if we agree, like, oh, so what time on Saturday? And again, this is kind of like one of those things that can feel very controlling if you don't have that common language of, hey, this is how we're going to make commitments. And the reason we're going to make commitments with specific times on them is because neither of us want to be like, you feel like I'm, you know, if we agree that you're going to get something done by noon, it's okay for me to send you an email at 12:05 saying, hey, where is it? Sure. So it just creates a lot less drama, whether it's in a marriage or as a parent and child or in a professional setting. So this is one of the reasons why we created the video book where people can actually watch a chapter, or you can go to talkshift.com/share, and you can share one specific chapter with anyone in your life. And you can put a little note, hey, this is why this is important. So if you have that one employee that you could say, hey, would you mind taking 10 minutes and watching this one chapter, and let's chat about how we could maybe change our communication in the future to create less drama and, you feel less controlled and me feel less frustrated or uncertain of when something's going to get done.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, communicating as parents. You know, I experience this all the time, and I definitely need to shift the way I speak, especially my oldest. You know, what are some tips that, you know, you can give without giving away the secret sauce of the book, but, you know, on communicating with your children?
So one of the ones that I get the most comments about is number 5. It's called On a Scale of 1 to 10. And so I'll tell a story about a woman named Ashley. She was an entrepreneur. And she probably bought the book because she saw it was a leadership book, but she called me and she's a stranger. She called me and she said, I have to share this story. So it was COVID. She's like, I work out of my home. My kids are on their iPads all day. I've got a 6 and a 7-year-old. And I'm always telling them, like, turn your iPads down. Cause you know, she's trying to have business meetings with, this is early in COVID. So she had not quite gotten to having a space yet. Cause it's probably right. May of last year. And she said, I tried the scale of 1 to 10. And I went up to my 7 or maybe 8-year-old on his iPad. And she said, so the technique is we ask on a scale of 1 to 10, but we exaggerate the scale. Part of the thought is that the more we exaggerate the scale, the more it opens up room for honesty. So if we have a difficult conversation with someone where we say, hey, how do you feel about our relationship? Or how do you feel about our communication? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being we are like the best couple. Our communication is better than anyone we know, anyone we've heard about, anyone we read about. Number 1 is like we are the worst of anyone we know, anyone we read about, be like worst in the world. Where are we on a scale of 1 to 10? Like a 7 on that scale is still pretty good, right? So she used this and applied it with her kids and said, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you're being as loud as a freight train. And 1, you're being as quiet as a mouse. Where are you right now? And she said her 8-year-old or 7-year-old just turned his iPad down. And he went over to his sister across the room, whispered into her ear, and she turned her iPad down. And it was done.
Wow.
And so the scale of 1 to 10, like I most frequently get comments from people who are readers saying, I use this with my kids. I use them at dinner. And they're starting to talk more because I'm asking them questions in a different way. And the other thing that what happens is, you know, it works on the positive end of the scale because the follow-up question is, well, what's the difference between an 8 and a 10 or a 7 and a 10? Like, what can we start doing or stop doing that would be better communication in our marriage or as parents or whatever? And, but it also works well on the bottom end of the scale. So if I say, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm the worst dad or worst mom or worst husband on the planet. Where do you think I am? Even if somebody's like, well, they're not a 1 because of that. They're not 2, not 3, not 4. They're like a 5. Well, that person is now in a different spot than they were before the questions was asked because they actually thought you were a 1, but they never had actually thought it all the way through. So they actually had to recognize what were the good things about where you were. And then we can say, well, what's the difference between a 5 and a 9? What could I start doing or stop doing to be the difference between a 5 and a 9?
So why do you think the scale is effective? Because it puts both players on the same page?
So one, I think there's 2 reasons. One, it opens up, I say, one of the things that I intended with the talk shifts is to kind of give words to those seeking their voice and courage to those seeking their volume. Too often, we silence what we really feel or what we really want to say because we're afraid. I mean, maybe I'm not afraid of divorce, but if I'm a boss and a employee, like, as much as I wanted to be a boss, be like, you can tell me anything. The reality is the person on the other side of that conversation is, yeah, I can tell you anything and you can fire me at any time. In a marriage, this power dynamic works a little bit differently, right? You know, maybe one person is the primary wage earner and the other one has like some fear around financially. Like, well, if we got divorced, I don't know how I'd even be able to support myself. Or even if you have a dual income family, like, I don't know if I would be able to live the kind of lifestyle and provide the lifestyle for my children that I do as a dual income. But then there's not just financial power, there's also emotional power, right? Men, I think probably more so, based on some of the researches, we maybe don't speak because we're afraid of being criticized. We're afraid to look bad in front of our spouses, right? So So there's this kind of dynamic of emotional power and financial power that kind of is going back and forth. And the scale of 1 to 10 gives us more room to be honest and have real conversations than a yes, no question. Like, hey, are you happy? Yeah, I'm happy. No, I'm not really happy, but I'm going to tell you that I'm happy.
You leave me alone.
Yeah. Well, because I'm afraid that if I say no, I don't know where that conversation is going to go. Yeah. So I think that one is the honesty aspect, opening up honest and courageous conversations. And then the second thing is some of the neuroscience behind it is that when we ask questions on a scale of 1 to 10, it's more likely that people just do the math subconsciously in a split second in their head. It's not a 10 because of this. It's not a 9 because of this. It's not an 8, not a 7, not a 6. And that's why I'm more likely to have an actual meaningful response when you ask the follow-up question, what can we start doing or stop doing? Because I've actually already kind of in a split second kind of thought through it. And then the other thing I think that I say throughout the book is that a lot of these questions, when they're tools to enter into more courageous conversations that maybe people aren't talking about. I say like, we need to start talking about the words we use, the words we choose, and more importantly, the ones we're saying, and maybe most importantly, the ones we aren't. Because the ones that we aren't are the ones, those are the conversations, the deeper conversations where the kind of the landmines are. So simply by opening these kind of deeper conversations with our children, our spouses, and others in our lives, what happens is we start to develop a little bit more courage ourselves. But then you get this, it's just more concrete actions of how we can kind of improve. We start becoming more aware. Like, because if our spouse or child is frustrated with our communication, they're probably not the only person in our lives who's frustrated with our communication.
Huh. There's a question I've been wanting to get answered by someone that thinks along the lines of communication, right? And I read somewhere that it's on the deliverer of the message as opposed to the receiver of the message, or the responsibility to get the message across is more on the deliverer of the message. Have you read anything like that, or is that?
I think there's some truth to that. I'm actually working on my next book, and I'm kind of trying to turn that. So this tentative title is The Plot to Change the Words of the World. And one of the premises is that there's a difference between miscommunication, misunderstanding, and misinterpretation, right? Mm. Miscommunication is the fault of the speaker. Misunderstanding is the fault of the listener. But misinterpretation is really no one's to blame. And so we're actually doing some things that with the video book and audio book, where a lot of the things are actually purposely, like, have you ever listened to a song and you like realize, oh my God, I've been singing the wrong lyrics for like 20 years. I was so certain that that song was this.
And I just did says, that
no, with no, Pearl no, that's not it.
Like, Pearl Jam's Alive. I just did
Look it up on the website. It's right there. Like, oh, wow, I had no idea. Yeah. The same things happens in our words. So in this next book, what we're doing is we're actually going to show people how we play with words. So like, if you listen to the audiobook, you might get, well, maybe you will get a different message than if you actually read the book or watch the video book with the subtitles on. Because we want to send a message that sometimes the whole book is a little bit of metaphor for how what doesn't get said or what doesn't get heard is actually how relationships often break. And it's this whole concept of misinterpretation is very different than miscommunication or misunderstanding.
Are you finding that the audience is kind of widening to this idea?
Well, I'm literally still writing the first drafts. I just
But I mean, the idea of the 22 shifts and the idea of communication being something you could work on,
Oh yeah, I'm blown away by I never would have thought that I would be getting calls on a Sunday afternoon from 78-year-old women saying, I'm buying 4 copies, one for my husband, one for my 48-year-old daughter, one for my son, because he's having some challenges in his relationship and his marriage. So the book is actually finding, finding people. When I was going through, we rewrote this book like 5 times. And the final round with, I found an amazing editor, and I said, Dancy, we cannot release this book unless we feel pretty comfortable that at least 1 in 10 people will say, hey, you need to read this book. Because like, why spend a lot of money marketing a book that like everyone's going to be like, forget that.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm admittedly, I'm kind of blown away by some of the emails I get where people are like, I've given like 5 copies out to my friends. And, obviously having the video book where people can share individual chapters certainly helps, to kind of, although frankly, we just created that in the last couple of weeks. So it's, people are not using it. Mostly people are buying the book for friends and family.
Yeah. That's a cool idea that you can send, you know, cause I know with my wife, often I'm reading a book that she's really not interested in, but if there's a, like a chunk that you want to pull out and send, it's like, that's a nice option.
Yeah. And then you don't even have to, because if you give her the book, then she'd be like, you know, where is it? She'd be like, she'd see your notes where you're like, my wife needs to do this. So you like, just watch the video book. Yeah, no. I had nothing to do with you. I just thought you might find it interesting.
You know, look, and I know I'm not alone. So I can, you know, Darren probably can attest to this. I'm a bull in a china shop at times. And I think it's hard to, you know, I have a hard time separating that out with work. I mean, what are some tips? I mean, I'm definitely picking up the book because I think it speaks directly to my personality. But how do you, you know, separating that out and more in the home space, like coming home, talking to your spouse, talking to your kids, what are some, you know, some things folks can take away?
I think the simplest example, like, well, maybe not the simplest, the one most powerful tool is Talk Shift number 16. It's the 10 statements that will make you a better partner, parent, and boss. And it's basically like a 360 review for a dad. Mm. And so I actually do this with my kids every Father's Day. It's like, there's a little worksheet you can download, but it's called the Father's Creed, or it could be the Mother's Creed or the Couple's Creed. It's actually the same 10 statements, mm-hmm. With the exception of one is different if you were to use it with an employee versus spouse or whatever. And you just go through and you say, hey, I'm going to read these statements and then I'm going to ask you. I did it. My first time I did it was my 7-year-old son. You'd be amazed what you'd learn from a 7-year-old. You know, it's just simple phrases. Like, I listen when you speak. You say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing on that? You know, 10 being perfect, 1 being like, and you'd be like, I'd say about a 6. Like, oh, what's a 6? And so I sit there with the actual worksheet and I like, write it down. I take a picture of it and we actually come up with, I make some commitments like, oh, here's what I'm going to do differently. You know, I'm going to put my phone away. In his case, that particular case, it was like, hey, you're on your phone a lot. I'm like, okay. So at 6 o'clock, I'm going to put my phone away. And if I ever have my phone, we had a little code word that he could say to me that was like my reminder. So we could have fun with it. And So you go through these 10 different statements and each of them is like, it's a personnel review for you as a dad,
yeah.
in the words of your audience, which is your son or daughter. And you can do the same thing with your spouse. And interestingly, whether you're a boss, a father, a mother, a husband, or a wife, the 10 statements are exactly the same.
Mm. Wow.
So
with the exception of one, because there's, you know, you probably wouldn't ask your employee, like, you know, you feel loved, but other than that one, there's a slight change to the wording that puts it in a professional context.
And respected or something. Yeah. So is it all about the book? I mean, is there resources on the website or is there trainings or anything like that? Is it?
Well, we do have a coaching program that's kind of like, I don't know if it's really a coaching program. It's really more a community for the people who are committed to helping us change the words of the world. Coaching is part of it. There's a private Facebook group at talkshift.com/us. That right now we're really focused on the book and kind of selling our first 100,000 copies. Naturally if we sell 100,000 copies of the book and people are recommending it around like they tend to be already, then a lot of those other resources, will kind of come to life, over the next 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can totally see like a Stephen Covey kind of approach, you know, where there's trainers walking people through these guidelines. And, you know, I had introduced when I came into work in this finance firm for a little while, I started doing like books, almost like, you know, everybody read this, we'll talk about it later. Yeah. And interesting, there was one that we did was what got you there won't get you here.
Yep, I read that.
And the response was really interesting. I mean, there was some people were like, they were not about it.
Yeah.
Right. And other ones dove right in. But I think this is a really good trigger point for making change. And I think just watching you and not having known you prior to this conversation, just your own sense of communication, where it's, you know, it's, there's a certain calm about you. There's a, you know, you're a two-way listener. So it's funny because you meet people and they're all about communication, but they don't give you a chance to breathe. you know, they don't match what their story is, and it's obvious that, you know, you really believe it, but you're also, you know, you're holding the, you know, you're a pillar of it. So
yeah, that's well, one of the things we're doing. I mean, you mentioned in organizations, because as we have this video book, one of the things, you know, I do a lot of keynote speaking. Well, I did before, you know, events went away, but so it's starting to pick up again, fortunately. But I do a lot of keynote speaking, and with this video book, one of the things that we're doing is, essentially creating like a custom video book. So if an organization wanted to kind of push this out into their organization, whether it's a school district or a corporation or whatever, then basically they can buy, you know, bulk copies of the video book at a very attractive price. And then what I often do is I'll do an interview like this with their CEO, like, so where we can kind of customize the content to like that organization's specific challenges. And so, and then, you know, this TalkShift TV, you can get it on Roku. You have to search for TalkShift TV, unfortunately, because it's a fairly new app. You can get it on Roku, Apple TV, Android TV, Fire TV. People can go home and they can watch this video book with their families, including some messages from the CEO or the vice president of HR or whatever the senior executive sponsor is, where we've actually personalized these tools to the specific challenges of that organization. And that's kind of like, even, you know, we may find that if you're open to it, this interview could be on TalkShift TV for people who've read the book, to get as like exclusive content, for those who purchased the video book. And so that's a big part of how I'm trying to get the message out. I'm fortunate that I've had the financial success in my former career as a CEO. So I'm not really doing this for financial gain. In fact, we've kind of just put in place the legal framework to give more than 50% of our profits back to nonprofits. And if we can figure out how to do this with spending less money on marketing, there will be more profits to share with nonprofits. But at this point, the Mark Zuckerberg machine takes a lot of our profits for Facebook advertising.
Right.
But and then the Jeff Bezos machine takes the other half for the Amazon books, but. We're working through that, and we'll crack the code.
Awesome. Here. Yeah.
Well, Krister, tell us website again so that, you know, folks can find it. We'll also include it in the show notes.
So the website is www.talkshift, not plural. Still trying to get that company to sell me that domain name, but the talkshift.com. And you'll get, if you go and buy it on the website, there's actually a lot of free bonuses and things like that that you wouldn't get if you purchased on Amazon. It is available on Amazon. I encourage you to look at the reviews. There's like over 150 5-star reviews and some amazing words that strangers have said about the book. So,
wow, great work. Great work.
Well, maybe we can, Darren and I, grab a copy and then we can do a follow-up interview.
Sure.
And how we've implemented it into our households.
I actually I did an interview. It's on TalkShift TV called Old Guys New Tricks. I all the guys that are these old retired, they refer to themselves as old, retired construction workers working on my basement. I asked them to read the book, and then I brought a video camera, a very crew in, and we filmed an interview. And the next step is actually to bring their wives in, and then we're going to hear from their wives the before and after
picture.
After reading the book. So
nice.
Great work. Yeah, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.